Welcome to the Paradise Paradox. Crazy ideas for open-minded people. Now, the other day on Facebook, I made a post talking about how a person could contact his ancestors and how you might actually have the knowledge available to you hidden within your genetic code or within your morphogenetic makeup. And my friend Marco Leon asked me, "Wow, Kurt, how does a person even do something like that? Do you have a methodology that you can share?" And I said, maybe I overextended myself in this Facebook post. But I want to talk a bit about that and explain my own experiences. And hopefully some people out there can gain something from it or just laugh at me because I'm a complete wacko. So let's talk about that. Something happened to me the other night as I was going to sleep, and I guess weird things happened to me quite a lot as I'm going to sleep. These hypnopompic, hypnagogic experiences between waking states and sleeping states, unusual visitations. Recently, I've been trying to do some focus on protection, especially when I go to bed at night. So I'm trying to do some exercises around bodily awareness, think about the different parts of my body, trying to feel the bliss of just existing, the aliveness of each of my cells and each of the parts of my body and how they make up one coherent, wonderful whole, and then focus on a kind of protective shell surrounding me. It's also related to the work of an interesting character called Nikolai Levashov, who was recommended to me by my friend Eli. So it's kind of funny because sometimes if you're a strange person like me, sometimes in the night there will be monsters, ghosts, demons in the darkness, and it's not always clear what you should do about it. Sometimes they seem benevolent, sometimes they offer me advice, and sometimes they try to do nasty things, or sometimes they're just confused and they want my advice. But on this night, what happened was similar to what happens sometimes on a psychedelic journey. So I started to notice there was something unusual going on. The light was switched off, and I'm looking at the curtains, and it looks like the curtains are waving in the wind. And they probably were a little bit, but moreover, it looked like the curtains were actually alive, like they had this quality of aliveness, just like when I feel parts of my body. Then I looked over to my left, and there's a few shadows, and there's my black jacket on the coat stand and this kind of thing, and I noticed, it looks like there's some being over there as well. And this is, I don't talk about this a lot because it's a bit weird, and sometimes I feel like I have to be careful with who I share these things with. I mentioned it to a close friend of mine the other day, Luke, and he was like, "Don't you ever worry that you're cracking up? Don't you ever worry that you're schizophrenic?" I'm like, "Nah, dog," because these things are well integrated experiences in my life, and I know that they have meaning. They don't necessarily always have literal meaning, but they have some kind of meaning. Sometimes I say that these things are like, say you're in a game, a computer game, and you have a heads-up display. Now, you know that there are things around you within the space of the game, and these things take up this 3D physical space, if we can call it that. But on the heads-up display, it shows you data. And these things don't necessarily correspond directly to the physical world. But they do tell you something, and they are meaningful. And actually, they're very, very helpful. if you know how to interpret those instruments. So this is how I look at having these experiences. They're not always directly literal. They're not necessarily related directly to the physical world, but they can tell you things about yourself. And I think that's important to note, because the way that sometimes mentally ill people or people who see the world a bit different, neurodiverse people, really get a bad rap and get into problems because they're treated like crazy people. And that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes these people literally just have a different way of seeing the world. Anyway, I hope it's important to say that, because if people don't talk about this stuff, then people just don't know. Because when this kind of thing started happening to me, I had no framework to put it into. There's no societal, cultural framework in the West, in the English-speaking countries, so people just don't know. Then, what happened with this experience, like I said, it's similar to what happens sometimes on a psychedelic experience. So I was worried, these kind of beings, they seemed like they wanted to touch me. And I was like, hang on, sport, how do I know what your intentions are? How do I know this is going to be something good for me? And they said, well, you asked for us to be here, and that's why we're here. And I did remember, I was thinking about this. I wasn't thinking about inviting spiritual surgeons into my room at night, but I was thinking about how I could improve my life, especially because I'd been feeling some nerves, some anxiety that day, and seemingly without any particular trigger, or the triggers that were bringing these things on weren't proportionate. So the nerves, the anxiety, was disproportionate according to the events that seemed to be causing it. So I said, well, okay, how can I know what the message is here? How can I know how to interpret this? And how can I overcome it by integrating the lessons of it? So this is an important thing. A lot of people, when they have strong emotions or something goes wrong in their life, and they're feeling depressed or anxious or something, they're trying to shut it out. And that's a lot of the time what happens in the psychiatric industry. They'll tell you, just take this pill and you feel numb. You won't feel your emotions anymore. But like I said, you got this heads up display and there's information coming at you from every angle. And sometimes there's a big red light flashing in your face. And if you take a pill that turns off that light and makes it so it can't turn on again, you might run into many more problems. So that's why it's a good practice to ask, what is the underlying message behind this emotion? And it's not always this direct causal relationship, like, oh, I met this person and I like this person and they make me nervous, or I went to a job interview and it made me nervous. There's more to it than that. There's other levels of analysis. So that's why I started asking these questions. And I asked them strongly, spiritually, with intent, like a prayer, you could say. And so it turned out my prayers that night were answered. And these beings, I said, okay, I guess you're going to want to touch me. And it seemed like what was going to happen is they're going to do this spiritual surgery on me. So they're going to enter my soul and enter my mind and play with things and tinker with them and make them better. And I thought, okay, well, I know what's going to happen if I resist this. It's going to be very uncomfortable for me, because the same thing would happen if I took a psychedelic trip. And somehow when I asked these beings, what are you doing here? Who are you? What are your intentions? They managed to assure me that they had no bad intentions. They were actually there to help me. And so I submit. I said, okay, do whatever you had to do. And again, it's an unusual experience. I don't know if I've ever actually had that experience quite like that, even on psychedelics, but it was like they're opening up my belly and looking inside my belly, just like opening the front of a car and just tinkering around under the hood to see what they can figure out. And I started to go into a deep meditation, or like this, again, a state in between sleeping and waking. And at some point, I wake up just a little bit more. And it was like I just heard the end of a conversation, somebody, like two people talking. It was like my unconscious mind was talking to one of these beings, and they're having a conversation. And I was like, hang on, who, what now? What are you asking? And the being said to me, well, listen, Kurt, what's going on is I'm having this conversation with this part of your mind that's just below. So you don't need to worry about it. We're just going to have a conversation and we'll sort things out. So just chill. And I was like, okay, cool. So I calmed my conscious mind and allowed the process to continue. It's all right, it sounds bananas. Now, what I think is recently we've been reading this book with the Multiversity Project. We read Prometheus Rising by Robert Anton Wilson, and it's a fascinating book. It's based around Timothy Leary's Eighth Circuit Model of Consciousness. And the bottom four circuits are mundane things like your survival mechanism, dominance or submission, the need for food, seeking rationality or seeking to justify one's own positions. And then the higher circuits are based around mystical states, we could say, higher levels of being. For example, circuit five is about contacting one's own bliss or being in control of one's own bliss. Circuit six is the neurogenetic or morphogenetic circuit, and it's about being in contact with the wisdom contained within your own DNA or contained within your own morphogenetic framework, like your own morphic fields that surround you, that lay the groundwork for the kind of person that you can become, your potentiality, spiritual potentiality, or your depth of your soul that comes with you, that is inherited, as Rupert Sheldrake talks about. So there are a lot of things on those episodes that I didn't get to talk about because the subject is just so incredibly dense and interesting. One of these methods, which you might say is used for contacting this morphogenetic or neurogenetic circuit, Wilson mentions in the book. So he says to imagine that you have this grand computer, and this computer actually knows everything there is to know in the universe, and it will always answer your questions, but they have to be phrased in the right way. That is, if you phrase them with an element of doubt, then the computer is going to accept that literally. So it's like if I say, please tell me where the glass of water is, and then I doubt it, that's like saying the opposite. It's like saying, please do not tell me where the glass of water is. So the doubt in your emotional state is part of the grammar. So what Wilson says is, start off with easy things. So if you start asking these easy questions, then you build more confidence, and eventually you can ask more and more complex things. And this inherent wisdom or knowledge that's within your own self can start to help you and guide you. Now, I haven't tried that exercise particularly, but I think you can see the analog with the experience that I described. I also find this piece of the book really interesting because it reminded me of the passage from True Hallucinations by Terence McKenna, where he's talking about Dennis McKenna going off the rails, having a kind of psychotic experience or spiritual awakening, perhaps better said. And at one point, Dennis becomes so confident that he's contacted some kind of God consciousness that he starts to say, listen, I've figured it out. All anybody needs to do if they want to gain some kind of knowledge is just to ask, but they must ask first with my name. And so Terence starts trying this out, ever the scientist, ever the seeker of knowledge. Terence goes around and looks at a plant. They are in the Amazon, and points to a plant and says, Dennis, in his head. What is the name, the scientific name, of this plant? And immediately he gains a response in his mind, which almost surprises him. It seems to come out of nowhere. And he repeated this with other items and plants and things. Unfortunately, it seems like he wasn't very rigorous in recording the results of these experiments, so we don't really know if the Dennis method works. But maybe that's something you could try. In the book, there's also an interesting Circuit 6 experience. What happens is, I think it's Dennis has this experience where he feels at once like he is the entire human race. Or maybe it even goes beyond that. Maybe it goes back farther. Maybe he feels like he's all life on Earth, and then he feels like he's all mammals, and then all primates, all humans. And then he feels like he's the McKenna clan, and then later feels like he's one of the two sons, Terence or Dennis, and then eventually identifies with himself. ¿Qué tal?
It's for you too?
Yeah. Don't be yet. Chad the French waffle man come up, give me a waffle. Take a waffle break. 4,000 Guarani bargain. There's another exercise which was described to me by my dear friend Ethel Guzman. And she told me that in Carlos Castaneda, he describes this exercise. It's similar, but it's a bit different. They say it's based on contacting your alternate version self, or the best version of yourself, from another reality. So what you do, the methodology is reasonably simple, and I think a lot of people will agree it's also psychologically sound. So it makes sense on a magical level, also makes sense on a psychological level. So what you do is, when you're going to sleep, you start to take account of the things that are happening in your life, so your current life situation. So like, how is my family life, my love life? How is my material wealth? How am I feeling spiritually? And any other thing which you think is important. And you don't have to be too detailed. It's more important to try to do it rather than analyze every single part of your life, because you're letting it go into your subconscious mind, so can work on it while you're asleep. And then when you've taken account of many aspects of your life, you ask, okay, so how can I be better? How can I be more fulfilled, more happy, more wealthy, more wonderful, and more giving, more generous in this world? And ask with, again, with intention, like a prayer, let this beam out of you to the deeper part of yourself, or to this alternate reality version of yourself, or to your ancestors, whoever you want to do it. And Ethel told me that what happens is, within about 30 or 40 days, you will start to see changes happening in your life. There's another related exercise. There's this group on Reddit called Dimensional Jumpers, Dimensional Jumping. And what they do is this simple kind of magical ceremony, but it's so simple ridiculously simple. In fact, all you do is get two glasses and place them on a table in a place where you'll be, have some quiet space and be alone for maybe 20 minutes. And you take your jug of water. Each of the glasses is labeled, and you might label one present situation and one better situation or something like that. Or you might be more specific, like if you want money or something like that, if you want to improve your relationships, then maybe one is labeled with better loving relationships or something like that. Pour the jug into the first glass, the current situation glass, and focus on it. Think about your current situation. So again, this is similar to the castanada exercise. And then you take that glass, pour it into the better situation glass, and focus your intention, think about how things could be better. And then you simply drink the water. And that's the end of the ritual. So it's very simple, but again, it's psychologically sound because you're sending these messages to your subconscious. You're letting it know this is a symbol, and this is a symbol of getting better. So that kind of thing enters into you, and it literally enters into you because you have the water right there. They say the subconscious mind doesn't work so well with words, but symbols work much better. And that's why we have dreams. Dreams are always full of symbols and archetypes and other things. A lot of people have success with that method. So this is like, again, it's not exactly like coming into direct contact with the intelligence of your ancestors, but it's like receiving the wisdom. And a lot of the time, when you do this type of exercise, it doesn't actually take 30 or 40 days for things to get better. It might actually improve like the very next day. So similarly, I was talking about that interesting fellow, Nikolai Levashov. And what happened was, I had this certain question in my life about, I was feeling a little depressed and some other things, and I was wondering what to do about it. And I formed an intention to get better, and I tried to shift. I didn't even do the glasses exercise. I just tried to like step into the next world where things were slightly better. And the very next day, out of the blue, my friend Eli messaged me and reminded me about this fellow Levashov and his techniques, and highly recommended to start doing them and receive instruction from another practitioner as well. So I followed his advice, and lo and behold, things started changing in very interesting ways. Now, I think that's important too, because that's the last step, and this is talked about in The Secret as well. So a lot of people will ask for something, but when it comes, they don't accept it. So everybody knows that story about the man waiting in the flood, and the helicopters come, and he said, "No, it's okay. God will show me a way out." And when he gets to heaven, because he's flooded out, he's like, "God, why didn't you send anybody?" He says, "What are you talking about? I sent those whole helicopters, I sent boats, I sent everything." So the important part of that story in this context is remember to accept the help. Because at first, when Eli started telling me this stuff, I started saying, well, I'm a little skeptical about that. And I have my own rationalizations and beliefs, and I don't know if this is going to work. But what Eli was offering me was a gift, and he was there willing to overcome some of my objections and tell me a whole lot of information, take the time, the loving, caring time of a friend, to tell me about this thing which had made a huge difference in his life. So that's very important. Ask for help. When you receive help, accept the help. It's wonderful to receive help, and it's wonderful to give help. And it's wonderful also to ask for help. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to check out also our podcast, The Multiversity Project. So you can check out multiversitypodcast.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So, of course, I know on the Paradise Paradox, sometimes I get a little woo-woo. We do that sometimes on the Multiversity Project as well, but the intent is to be more intellectually rigorous so we can support what we've said and give the proper context so people know whether things are scientifically backed or if they're more speculative. So recently, as I said, we've been talking about Prometheus Rising and this 8-circuit model. Soon we'll be talking about the sovereign individual and individual rights and some other things. I hope you check that out. Multiversitypodcast.com, multiversitypodcast.com, 1,000 years, forever and ever, multiversitypodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.